The numbers will tell us.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open. We're taking a look at the economy as markets start trading for the day. Earnings season, the big banks are reporting this week. And don't look now, two Americans win the Nobel Prize in Economics. But first, let's ask, where's Wall Street? The S&P is up about a quarter of a percent right now. The NASDAQ up about a half a percent. Same for the Dow, up about 38 points at 99.03. Right now, shares are up in Europe more than a percent, and stocks were mixed in Asia today. The Nikkei closed up, the Hang Seng closed down, and oil at about $72.50 a barrel in Singapore. Jeff Sought is chief investment strategist at Raymond James. He joins us live this morning from St. Petersburg, Florida. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Steve.
So we got some important economic data coming down this week, including some big bank earnings that really could send Wall Street one way or another. We're talking Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America. Are these numbers really a good barometer for the health of these big financials?
I think the numbers are for the Goldman Sachs's and the investment banks of the world, if you will. I think for some of the big cap banks like Bank of America, since the Financial Accounting Standard Board changed the rules, I don't really trust the earnings.
And you don't trust the earnings because of accounting rules?
Yep.
I mean, explain that a little bit.
They changed the rules on how they can account for toxic assets back in March, and then they did something I've never seen in 40 years. They actually told the banks to adopt the rule before they voted on approval of it in the beginning of April.
And what about retail sales? We're going to get those numbers later this week. Are we looking at a strong number, do you think?
I think you're going to see a sharp pullback in vehicle sales in September, but they're likely to be moderate otherwise. The median forecast is for minus 2.1 overall and plus 2/10 ex-autos.
All right. Jeff Sought, chief investment strategist at Raymond James. Jeff, thanks.
You bet.
I appreciate it. Two Americans won the Nobel Prize for Economics, Oliver Williamson, and the first woman to win the prize since its founding in 1968. Marketplace's Steve Henn reached out to the other winner, Eleanor Ostrom.
I was not prepared for this. So.
Eleanor Ostrom's life work as an economist was to challenge this phrase, the tragedy of the common. That idea is that shared resources, like pastures open to public grazing, are likely to be overused, overgrazed, and ultimately destroyed. Ostrom's research casts doubt on that proposition. She says communities are often able to protect and conserve shared resources on their own.
They may be able to outperform some kind of government that's located miles away and doesn't know anything about the local situation.
Ostrom says that doesn't mean all government regulation of natural resources is unnecessary. But she says when communities are the right size and recognize that an important natural resource is in trouble, more often than not, they can create their own solutions. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
A new insurance industry report claims the health care reform bill making its way through the Senate could drive up costs of a typical family's health insurance by as much as $4,000 a year. The White House and some congressional Democrats dispute the figure and say the number is inaccurate. We could see a vote as early as this week in the House on a bill that would create a consumer financial watchdog agency. It would cover everything from mortgages to credit cards. President Obama has been touting his plan for a while now, but Tamara Keith tells us there are also lots of people against the idea.
House Financial Services Committee Chairman Barney Frank says consumers need an advocate.
Because the bank regulators side with the banks more often than the consumers.
Consumer groups point to a list of recent abuses: deceptive mortgages, excessive overdraft charges, credit card interest rates that just keep rising. Even groups that oppose Frank's bill agree the current system has problems.
Of course it failed. Now how do we really fix it?
David Hirschman is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. His idea for a fix doesn't involve a new agency.
What you need is more effective government, not just more government.
The banking industry isn't a fan either. Scott Talbot is the chief lobbyist for the Financial Services Roundtable.
We need to strengthen our regulatory system to close silos and narrow gaps to prevent this type of crisis from happening again.
He's against it, but Talbot admits there's a lot of political will behind a new consumer protection agency. Of course, in Washington, a will doesn't always equal a way. I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Monday, October 12th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Automaker Toyota can't seem to make up its mind about where it wants to build the Prius. Right now, they're all built in Japan, but there's been talk of building those cars in the United States. With the yen much stronger than the dollar, the idea is sounding more practical every day. Elisa Roth explains.
Let's say the dollar is weak, like it is right now. You may not care that your Prius is made in Japan, but when you buy it with dollars, Toyota makes less money because those dollars are worth less when the company converts them back to yen. David Solon is a consultant at Foreign Exchange Analytics, and he says the way car makers get around that currency risk is to set up shop over here.
The bottom line is that the more dollars that they expect to take in, the more exposure they have by not manufacturing in the U.S.
But currencies can be weak one day and strong the next, and getting a plant going can take months or even years. John Casessa is an auto industry consultant, and he says a company can't just start producing cars in another country on the fly.
So the company's got to take a view that trends in the currency market will persist for some period of time, for years.
Casessa says the exchange rate isn't the only thing companies consider when they think about where to build plants. They also look at things like demand, shipping costs, and a market's potential to grow. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Chinese state oil company may go toe-to-toe against ExxonMobil and make an oil bid in West Africa. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. It seems the race for hydrocarbons is intensifying between the United States and China, the two most energy-hungry countries on the planet. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
The Target oil field in West Africa is one of the largest discoveries in recent years. ExxonMobil has bid $4 billion for a 23.5% stake. Now a Chinese state-owned oil company wants to trump that bid and is reportedly partnering with the government of Ghana to make an offer. David Zweig teaches at the Hong Kong University for Science and Technology.
And China's saying, we'll help you do it. We got the cash. We'll bid with your national oil company against Exxon. It's pretty smart politics. I do think that this is really going to get the Americans angry and really raise their antenna.
Zweig says there hadn't been much direct competition between the U.S. and China for hydrocarbons until now. China's oil consumption has doubled the past decade. It's currently the number one new car market in the world. ExxonMobil, meanwhile, is trying to make its first major purchase in a decade. Its output fell last year, and it says it may not hit its goal this year either. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The British livestock industry has had a tough time this past decade. The business has been battered by a series of epidemics, mad cow and foot and mouth. But there's a tiny corner of the industry that's flourishing. Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard introduces us to Britain's youngest pig farmer.
It's 6 a.m. Most of her school friends are still in bed, but Emma Chankey is hard at work, taking care of business. In a field not far from her home, Emma feeds her fast-growing herd of rare-breed pigs.
I suppose it all started when I asked for two pigs for my birthday, which I think my parents thought was quite a strange request for a 14-year-old girl.
Her parents tried to put her off. To show her how messy it would be, they sent her on a pig-keeping course, with unforeseen results.
It made me more aware about how rare some of the breeds are, so I wanted to help preserve them. And the best way to do that was by farming them.
It's a business now?
Yes, definitely. And the whole family is now involved, so that's nice.
Emma now has 38 rare breed pigs, like Saddlebacks and Gloucester Old Spots. She claims they make delicious sausages, bacon and chops, much better than the average supermarket pork, so people are willing to pay a premium. She's now branched out into selling pig shelters and running her own pig-keeping course. A bit much for a 16-year-old, perhaps. Her dad, Pete, doesn't think so.
I think it's incredibly good for her. I mean, from a money-managing point of view, the amount of paperwork that goes into a business, I mean, it's certainly experience she will have that none of her school friends will have when it comes to being able to go in the employment market.
Come on, Acorn. Hello, Jimmy. Come on.
In spite of her obvious affection for the pigs, Emma has learned one of the first rules of business. Don't get sentimental about the stock.
What about when they go off for slaughter? Isn't that a bit of a wrench?
I suppose I'm used to it by now. I mean, I know they've had a wonderful life and looked after them and they've been happy and the meat tastes wonderful afterwards, so yeah, I suppose I'm used to it.
In Preston on Wye, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report from American Public Media. If you're a Cubs fan, you know this line: wait till next year. In a courtroom, the team's new owner, the Ricketts family, is hoping bankruptcy will help wipe the slate clean as well. Reporter Joel Rose has more.
It's not that the Chicago Cubs are losing money. They're not. The Ricketts family is buying a majority stake in the team from the Tribune Company, which is also in bankruptcy. And Smith College economist Andrew Zimbalist says the family wants to be sure that all it's getting is the team, with no surprises.
There was some concern on the part of the Ricketts family that if the Cubs didn't separately go through this process, that somehow, somewhere, sometime, the Ricketts family would end up being liable for some of the debts of the Tribune Corporation.
The Ricketts family is paying a record $845 million for the Cubs, Wrigley Field, and other assets. The transaction is not structured as an outright sale. Instead, Tribune is holding on to 5% of the team. That's supposed to help the company avoid paying $300 million in capital gains taxes, though tax experts say the IRS may want to take a closer look at the deal. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Finally, feeling a bit skittish about shaking hands in this time of swine flu? Imagine if you're on a job interview. A business professor from the University of Iowa says the handshake is an important marker of personal interaction. Research, he says, shows potential employers might look at a prospect negatively if he or she withholds the handshake, even if it's in fear of catching the nasty H1N1 virus. His advice: reschedule if you think the boss-to-be is sick, and if not, shake that hand and use a sanitizer. You could be grasping victory. Hey, check us out online at marketplace.org. We're podcasting there from Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
American Public Media.